So in chapter 5, and as Krishna was explaining how one will come to the platform of liberation through the Nishkam Karma Yoga. And then he explained how you can also attain that same platform through the Ashtanga Yoga. So in this chapter then the process of yoga will be explained more thoroughly. So this chapter is called Jnana Yoga. So the first four verses are explaining how to advance in yoga through detached work. Next one. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "One who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life. And he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty. What is called renunciation you should know to be the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme. The son of Pandu, for one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. For one who is a neophyte in the Eightfold Yoga system, work is said to be the means. And for one who is already elevated in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. A person is said to be elevated in yoga when, having renounced all material desires, he neither acts for sense gratification nor engages in fruitive activities." So here we see in the first point Krishna is making is that if we're working but we're not attached to the fruit, that is actually the renounced order of life. Otherwise, one may have given up work. He says, "He who lights no fire, nor performs no duty." So the sannyasi in the Vedic age would not touch fire. He would not light fire because fire was the means through which one gained material prosperity. Through the fire, they would perform their karmakanda yajnas. And through fire, then they would do their cooking and eating and all these kind of things. So prosperity in this life and in the next was all done through fire. So the sannyasi, he lit no fire. Right? And he had no material duties to perform. There were no social duties or anything that he would do within the context of the lifestyle of the people in general. So they had their own, they would just stay away from everybody and do their sadhana like that. So Krishna's pointing out that the real sannyas means when we give up the fruits of action. In other words, it's very easy to understand someone's sannyas because they've given up the externals, given up the things around them. But it's very difficult to understand one gives up the desire. First of all, everyone will think, why I would work without desire? Right? If I have desire, I work. I don't have desire, I don't work. That's the way I've been working since time immemorial. So, and if I don't have desire, okay, I don't do work, but we don't consider that renounced. Right? I mean, so if you look at it, if I have a desire, I do it, and if I don't, then I don't work. We weren't interested. We'll look at it that way. So the materialistic concept of sannyas is just you're not interested, therefore you don't work. And this makes sense in certain ways to people. You know, everyone can relate to that. Okay, I have a big house, he has no house, I have fancy clothes, he doesn't have fancy clothes. You know, I cook and do all kinds of nice things and I don't. You know, like that. Then you can say, okay, there's a difference. Yes, I can accept. So because of this, then we are respectful. But here, Krishna's pointing out is that one who works giving up the fruits, in other words, when we renounce the fruits rather than the work itself, that is real renunciation. In other words, when the mentality is proper, then you actually get the real renunciation. Otherwise, you don't get. Even if you give up the work, if the desire is still there, one is not actually detached. So even though externally one has taken sannyas, internally it has not happened. But anybody who has given up the desire, that is sannyas, because you've attained the goal of it. It may not have the form of it, but it's gained the purpose of it. So that's what we do. A ritual has a purpose and a goal. So if you get attain the purpose and the goal without that ritual, then that is also the same. It's non-different. Right? This is important to understand, because in this chapter we're going to find out how the process of Ashtanga Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, because they have the same goal, they're the same. Right? You get the same results. So this is a very important point. It's because you get the same, when you get the same result, then it's considered the same. So if someone goes off to the forest and, you know, holds their nose and stops their breathing and stops their eating, and you can get the same benefit by sitting here, you know, and eating and sleeping and working and all that, then, you know, we get the same purpose. So what's the difference? There is no difference. Right? Just that this path is easier and quicker than the other. Right? So this is what would be brought out here. So we have to be able to see that when you attain the purpose and goal, then it's the same thing. Like that. Even though you didn't do the external rule, the external form of it. At the same time, if you have the external form and you don't get the purpose and goal, then it's not actually what it appears to be. Like that. So this is what it is. So what is called renunciation, you should know to be the same as yoga. Because yoga means to link with the Supreme. If you link with the Supreme, you have to detach yourself from material nature. Right? Bhujan gave the example, if you have a rock in your hand and if you want to catch something else, you have to let go of the rock and take the other thing. You can't keep this big rock in your hand at the same time you think you're going to hold on to a book. You know? It's not going to work. So it means the same thing. Attaching yourself to Krishna means detaching yourself from Maya. Because the material energy is Krishna's. But because we see it as ours, it's called Maya. Otherwise, the pure devotee engages in Krishna's service, he sees it as Krishna's. Right? This will be described here in this chapter. So it's the same. We do not make this distinction between the two. So now, even in the Eightfold Yoga process, this is very interesting, is that in the beginning stage, the neophyte stage, one still has to do detached work to purify oneself, to elevate yourself. Right? Generally, we think Ashtanga Yoga, from the very beginning when you start, you just go off somewhere and sit down and that's it. But it's pointed out by the Acharyas that Baladeva Vidyabhushan, there are two stages of Ashtanga Yoga. One is called Yoga Rurukshu, which means the beginning stage, and the other is Yoga Ruta. So he says when he is ascended to the achievement of yoga, to the platform of dhyana, then that is yoga ruta. That's advanced. And before that, that's called neophyte, right? Or the beginning stage. So up to the point of dhyana, then one should still perform prescribed duties with detachment. So even to make the beginning of the yoga process work, you still have to follow nishkam karma. That means when one is performing yama and niyama, what you should do, what you should not do. Things favorable, things unfavorable. You're still performing prescribed duties, detached prescribed duties. When you're doing asana, you're not going to do asana all day. So you can't do asana all day. You don't have that concentration. So when you're not doing asana, you're doing prescribed duties, detached prescribed duties. Then while you're doing that, you're practicing your pranayama. So even when you come to the point you can stop the breathing, still the senses are going all over the place. So then, while you're stopping the breathing and then bringing all the senses together, that's called pratyahara. Still, in the meantime, you have to perform your prescribed duties. Then, when you come to the platform of dharana, means now you fix the mind in one point, right? So after all this, Then the yogi fixes in one point. So this is vyavasayatmika buddhi. Now you pulled it out of the senses and fixed it in one point, the Supreme Lord. Once that is accomplished, in other words, you come to the platform of vyavasayatmika buddhi, then you can stop doing anything else, sit down for 24 hours a day with the breath stopped, no eating, no sleeping, and just meditate, you know, concentrate on the end of the notes, and think of the Lord 24 hours a day. That, at that point, then you renounce work. But before that, you do your prescribed duties, whatever they may be. Right? So even in this system, then, so this is what it means. For one who is neophyte in the Eightfold Yoga system, work is said to be the means, because you purify yourself. And for one who is already elevated in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. Because then they stop anything material, right? Anything we think, eating, sleeping, mating, it's all stopped, including breathing. Right? So they stop, when they say they stop all material activities, they're pretty serious about it. Okay. So then here, then we can see that what's going to be going on now, which Prabhupada brings out at the end of the purport, is that this, in understanding this yoga, what Bhurijan Prabhu calls the yoga ladder, coming from karma into karma yoga, then jnana yoga, then the astanga yoga, and then to bhakti yoga, is that simultaneously means these are different separate items on this path. It's all Krishna's path. And in that, they can be semi-complete in themselves. In other words, you can be a karma yogi and you can have your short-term goal of just gaining knowledge and not know anything beyond that. Right? Then when you've attained that platform of purity, then one may give up his work and take up this jnana, developing that more. And he has his goal of coming to the platform of the Brahma-bhuta. Then the yogi, then once he's situated on that, then if he's fortunate, then he understands in the yoga system, then you meditate upon the Paramatma. And then, when one's obtained that, if one's fortunate, now you've seen the Paramatma, you take up devotional service. So generally we're talking many, many lifetimes. We're not talking one lifetime. It takes a long time, as we'll come out. But then the same principle, same steps are there for the bhakti yogi. It means the neophyte bhakti yogi goes through the same steps, but instead of over many, many lifetimes, in one lifetime. He takes up the work, cultivates the knowledge, does it for Krishna, so he's starting to make that attempt of linking. And when that comes to the platform of purity and he comes to the point of equanimity, then he can start to render that pure, unalloyed devotional service. So you can either see the whole process as bhakti, and someone who from the stage of karma yoga sees Krishna as the ultimate goal and works for Krishna, that is bhakti. Then as he advances, he comes to the platform of jnana, means where jnana becomes more prominent in his work. You know, before it's the work is the main thing, and one is trying to concentrate on the work, with time one sees, one has that vision, you know, of seeing everyone equally and everything as servant of the Lord, while doing one's service. Then one comes to the platform and starts to, you know, strongly link all the activities with the Lord. And then we come to the platform of pure love. So we see that these are just the various stages of the Kanista, the Madhyam, and the Uttamadhikara. But they're all contained within the system of bhakti. Or you can take them out, leave out Krishna as the goal of each of these processes. Then it becomes named by these different systems. Even in the Astanga Yoga, if you're only interested in, you know, fixing your health and that, you're called a Hatha Yogi. Right? If you're only interested in meditation, you call it a Dhyana Yogi or Raja Yogi. Mm-hmm. But if you're interested in serving the Super Soul, then you call it a Bhakti Yogi. Like that. So it's very interesting. The same, it's like parallel parallel path. These are a parallel understanding. One path with a parallel understanding. You can either take it in its little pieces, or you can take it as a complete whole. But the by understanding the complete process, that's what Krishna gives us. Otherwise, we know we're not going to do this. Arjuna rejects Ashtanga Yoga. But the principles that are there in this Ashtanga Yoga are applied in our devotional service, the stages we're going to go through. Like that. So, therefore, all this karma, jnana, and yoga are explained, because those are part of the Krishna's path. And the bhakti yogi, the neophyte bhakti yogi, will progress through these different stages. So, the next then is where the advanced yogi is then explained. This is the yoga ludha stage, giving up work. One must deliver oneself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. For him who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. For one who has conquered the mind, the supersoul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. A person is said to be established in self-realization and is called a yogi or mystic when he is fully satisfied by virtue of acquiring knowledge and realization. Such a person is situated in transcendence and is self-controlled. He sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones, or gold, as the same. A person is considered still further advanced when he regards honest well-wishers, affectionate benefactors, the neutral, meditators, the envious, friends and enemies, the pious and the sinners, all with equal vision. So now he's showing the platform of advanced. Well, we have to have the mind in control. When the mind is controlled, then everything starts to work. So the central feature becomes the mind. This is the difficulty in the whole process of spiritual advancement, is the mind. When the mind is controlled, then we have yoga. When the mind is not controlled, we don't. So that to that degree that it is controlled, we advance. To that degree it's not advanced, I mean controlled, then we are held back. So the whole central feature you'll see, Krishna is always talking about the mind and the symptoms of the one who is in that mental condition. In other words, the mind is in a certain stage, then you see all pebbles, stones, and gold is the same. Right? It's not that, you know, you can bring a dog, they can't tell the difference either. You bring a pebble, a stone, and a piece of gold, the dog will go out and smell all three of them and walk away. Right? They're just checking if they can eat them. That's all. So that doesn't make now this dog is like the greatest yogi, because he sees pebbles, stones, and gold, the gold's the same. Yeah? Honest, and the dog also sees honest well-wishers, affectionate benefactors, the neutral meditators, the envious friends, enemies, the pious, and the sinners, all with equal mind. Right? He's just looking, whoever's going to feed him, that's good. And if any of them die, he'll eat any of them. I mean, he's equal poised. He's not fussy. So that does not make him a great yogi. So, because his senses are still active, his mind is still absorbed in sense gratification. So these are symptoms of one whose mind is controlled. That is the point. So sometimes we have a tendency to get caught up in the externals of it. But the point is these externals manifest when the mind is like that. From thinking comes feeling, comes willing. Okay, so when you think in a certain way, then you will in a certain way. You deal in a certain way. That's why Arjuna asked in the beginning, how does he sit? It means how does he situate himself in the environment of the world? How does he walk? How does he interact? How does he speak? How does, when somebody deals with him in one way, how does he react to that? Because his mind is controlled, therefore he acts in a particular way. And that was Arjuna's point. So the mind, if we control it, is the best of friends. Because controlled mind means it always accepts and rejects. That's all it does. Now, all it's doing is accepting Krishna, Krishna's service, Krishna's devotees, whatever you see, you think about Krishna. right? Then that's a pretty, then that's, you don't mind having such a mind. But if it's always thinking of something else, then that's not very nice. Right? We look at this painting, we think of Lord Chaitanya, we start thinking about the pastimes. This mind is friendly. We see this painting, we think, wow, this should be in my house, why it's here. Then we've got a problem. You know? So like that, the mind has to be, when it becomes tamed, it's very friendly. And when it's not, then it's a big problem. Okay. So when the mind is controlled, then we're called yogi. Because then the link is there. It says, when the mind is controlled, the super soul is reached. The only thing stopping us from hearing what the super soul has to say is the mind. Because the mind relates with the ego, and then gives us so much trouble. So if we can conquer the mind, control the mind, then we're willing to listen to what the super soul says. So we're already linked. That's a yogi. Then the next section here, then it's quite a long section, but we'll break it up into pieces, is further stages of the practice of yoga. In other words, a little bit more detail of just what's just been said here. So then you give basically the process and goal of the yoga practice. You know, the externals of it and what is one will get. First 10. A transcendentalist should always engage his body, mind, and self in relationship with the Supreme. He should live alone in a secluded place and should always carefully control his mind. He should be free from desires and feelings of possessiveness. To practice yoga, one should go to a secluded place and should lay kusa grass on the ground and then cover it with a deerskin and a soft cloth. The seat should be neither too high nor too low, and should be situated in a sacred place. The yogi should then sit on it very firmly and practice yoga to purify the heart by controlling his mind, senses, and activities, and fixing the mind on one point. One should hold one's body, neck, and head erect in a straight line and stare steadily at the tip of the nose. Thus, with an unagitated, subdued mind, devoid of fear, completely free from sex life, one should meditate upon me within the heart and make me the ultimate goal of life. Thus practicing constant control of the body, mind, and activities, the mystic transcendentalist, his mind regulated, attains to the kingdom of God, or the abode of Krishna, by cessation of material existence. So this is the essence of what is going on in the yoga process. Though there's so much details, right? What is the proper place to sit? One has to know. Someone has to know the forest. You know, otherwise you pick a place too high, you may fall off, or, you know, winds may come, or, you know, something may happen. If it's too low, it may get flooded. So many different things are there. So you have to sit on your kuti, or your asan. Prabhupada mentions that, he says, this asanam, sthiram asanam, means firmly situated, means he doesn't change. It's not that you put your place down here, and then you're doing your meditation, well, that looks like a nice place. Then you pack everything up and go to that place, and wow, that's really beautiful over there. And like this. No, you just find a place and sit. And that's it. Then, not too high, not too low. And chaila means a cotton sitting place. Then you put the deerskin and then the kusa grass. Prabhupada mentions that that yogis would sit either on a deerskin or on a tiger skin. Because they're in a secluded place, why they're doing this? Because in a secluded place, then there's a chemical effect from the deer skin and you won't have reptiles and snakes bothering you. Because they're just sitting there. So the reptiles and snakes don't bother you. It doesn't mean ants won't bother you, but at least the reptiles and snakes won't bother you. So then to be able to sit like that means one has to have practice this asans, everything very nicely. So that's included. It says you must sit, so that means asans have to be done. Right? To purify the heart, controlling the mind, and fixing the mind on one point. Fixing the mind on one point means the senses already had to have been pulled in. So dharana is already complete. Then keeping the body, neck and head erect, this means also asanas had to have been completed. The purpose of all the asanas is simply the purpose to get the head, neck and back in a perfectly straight line. It's said in yoga, if you lay on your back, between your lower back and the ground, there should be no space. Right? Generally we'll find if we lay down, there's a nice space there. But for the yogi, it must be perfectly straight. Like you always see when they have the skeletons, they always draw it that there's a curve, like an S. They always say this is the normal backbone. That's the normal backbone of a non-yogi. The backbone of the yogi is perfectly straight. So all the asanas are simply for, your back is crooked in this way, you do these asanas. It's crooked in that way, you do those asanas. So like that, there's 8,400,000 asanas, one for each of the species of life, simply to correct any of the problems that are there from having been conditioned by 8,400,000 varieties of consciousness. In this way, then the back becomes perfectly straight, because you have to lift the life air. If it's crooked, it'll get stuck. Right? Therefore, it must be perfectly straight. Then, stare steadily at the tip of the nose, so that it's fixed when his mind is fixed. Thus, with an unagitated, subdued mind, devoid of fear. Now, devoid of fear here, one is you're living in the forest alone. You can't be afraid that someone's going to come and eat you. But more important than that is you cannot be afraid of your relationship with the Supreme Lord. It means the success, because Krishna is talking about successful yogi, means one who becomes a devotee. He's not talking about one who only makes it to Paramatma realization and that's it. He's not talking about the Patanjali yogi. He's talking about the perfect yogi. So that means we can't be afraid of our relationship that I'm serving the Lord. Because when you see Paramatma, then you either think, here is God, let me merge in Him. Or you think, this is me. Right? So both of these means there's some fear is there. We're fearful of our relationship. Don't know what is what, who we are. But the perfect yogi, then he understands, I am serving the Lord. So when he sees the Lord, he surrenders. Right? We see in the Bhagavatam so many cases of different devotees. They would meditate for 10,000 years, 60,000 years. They would see the Super Soul and then take up devotional service. So what they would do after 60,000 years, then that is what is Krishna is recommending you start today, rather than go through this whole process. Also mentions you have to be pure brahmachari. Like that. Otherwise the process doesn't work. The mind can't be controlled. Like that. One won't have the strength to raise the light bearers to the top of the head. Okay. So something being pointed out here is that it says here, the ultimate goal in practicing yoga is not clearly explained. Yoga practice is not meant for attaining any kind of material facility. It is to enable the cessation of all material existence. One who seeks an improvement in health or aspires after material perfection is no yogi, according to Bhagavad Gita. So when we're talking about, ultimately we're talking about yogi means bhakti yogi. He may be following these processes in their, you know, traditional form, or practicing them within the essence of them within the sadhana bhakti. But in either case, when one is doing these things to please the Lord, that is a yogi. Otherwise, even someone's a Patanjali yogi is technically not a yogi, because he's doing for some other purpose. Right? They may be going for mystic cities, some health, right? Like this. There's one. So here, it's being, Bhurijan was pointing out here that these different paths of karma, jnana, and yoga, they each have a weakness. That performing karma, or even sakam karma yoga, one may become attracted or caught up in the fruits. Jnana, one may be caught up in the brahman realization, and not wanting to be involved at all with the material nature, or not want to deal like that. Anxiety and service, freedom from anxiety and service, right? Service, you know, means that it's an endeavor, there may be anxiety, all these things. And yoga, one may be get interested in the mystic cities. So So these are the difficulties. Therefore, Krishna is asking, we give all these up. You take all these three, combine them together, and do without the results for any of them. Then you're going to get yourself out, right? We've been doing all these activities so long and keeping us here, karma, jnana, and yoga. Now we're going to follow the essence of karma, jnana, and yoga for Krishna. That's what we're going to free ourselves. This is the thorn taking out a thorn. Right? We've got a thorn, that's a big problem. But with another thorn, the same thing that's creating the problem, we can take it out. Then we're just left with bhakti. So then, and the next one is dealing with the control of the senses through regulation. I mean the senses and mind through regulation. And the results. This is 16 to 23. There's no possibility of one's becoming a yogi, O Arjuna, if one eats too much or eats too little, sleeps too much or does not sleep enough. He who is regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation, and work can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. Interesting, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that a yogi's recreation is walking. So you see, Prabhupada would like to go out and walk in the morning. He'd walk fast, right? Even the young people couldn't keep up with him. Right? So that was, he was following the path of the recreation of the yogi. When the yogi, by practice of yoga, disciplines his mental activities and becomes situated in transcendence, devoid of all material desires, he is said to be well established in yoga. As a lamp in a windless place does not waver, so the transcendentalist whose mind is controlled remains always steady in his meditation on the transcendent self. In the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there's no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actually freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. So this is now, pointing out that one cannot get to the advanced platform unless one has learned to regulate the senses. So this means regulating the eating, the sleeping, our work, our recreation, all these things have to be regulated. Otherwise, if any of them are out of balance, it'll throw off the whole process. So we have to be very careful that all these things are very nicely balanced. You know, we practice to balance these properly. Then we're able to situate oneself nicely in the transcendental platform. And in this, and it says, then the mind will not waver. Example is given of the lamp in a windless place. Then the flame is very nice and thin and straight. Well, if the wind is there, then it flickers or becomes small or makes all kinds of noise or turns different colors like this. But if it's windless, it just becomes very nice and very clear. Like that. So then when one comes to this platform, then one actually feels satisfied. That this is, one has attained something very wonderful, very great. So then, now in text 24 and 25, then Krishna explains how to attain that platform. Right? He's now described the platform, now how to get to there. 24. One should engage oneself in the practice of yoga with determination and faith, and not be deviated from the path. One should abandon, without exception, all material desires born of mental speculation, and thus control all the senses on all sides by the mind. Gradually, step by step, one should become situated in trance by means of intelligence sustained by full conviction. And thus the mind should be fixed on the self alone and should think of nothing else. So, in other words, the determination must be there. The sense control and determination. We must be determined. So this is also part of the visvyavasayatmika bhuti. One must have that determination, fixing the mind in one place and pushing forward with that determination. We'll get there. It's practice. Determination and practice. Like that. In the practice of yoga with determination and faith. So by the cultivation of knowledge, how do we get the determination and faith? We get by good association, performing that work without the attachment, we become purified, we gain knowledge of ourself as we understand who we are, who Krishna is, our relationship, that faith increases, that determination increases. So, but we're trying to get this determination and faith. This is what we're trying to gain. So when that determination is there, then we become very strong. We see that we were discussing in the process of anartha nivritti, it basically the determination starts on the fourth stage. Right? You've heard something, you think you're very, advanced, which is not, the fact. We're steady some days, we're not steady, or we're not quite sure which path to take to serve Krishna. How much we're going to dedicate ourselves or not, or how much to engage our senses or not, or, it's like we're not quite sure, like that. We're looking at it from what is good for us, our own benefits. But when we decide, make that determination that I'm going to serve Krishna, and not Maya, then that is where the war starts. Right? Before that, we're still quite influenced. But that's where the war starts with Maya. So at that point, the determination becomes very strong. And we see that we've understood that these anarthas are useless and we're trying to progress through them. Then this brings us to the stage. The next stage is where one's faith is very strong. But the determination is there, but the actual, perfection of practice has not come. We've made our sankalpa that we're going to do this, but then it doesn't happen. We get distracted. Right? Then again we try, and we get distracted again. But that determination will go on. It means Maya is not the attractive feature. The difficulty now is just getting done what we want to do, rather than being distracted by Maya. It's just, some other service, some this and that. We become, we don't quite have our priorities in line like that. Then one becomes very well fixed. This is called nishta then, nishta bhakti. So you hear the Bhagavatam Gita always talking about being fixed. Right? Whenever the word fixed is being used, it means this platform, nishta. And so you can only be fixed when the anarthas, the doubts, the misgivings are reduced, so that means the faith is increased. So when the faith is strong, means there's no doubts. That gives us that determination. So it comes together. Freedom from doubts, determination, faith, it's all the same. They all come together. Just different aspects of the same thing. Then, the next. So when we control, then the next points is then about coming to the transcendental platform. Text 26. From wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. The yogi whose mind is fixed on me verily attains the highest perfection of transcendental happiness. He is beyond the mode of passion. He realizes his qualitative identity with the Supreme, and thus he is freed from all reactions to past deeds. So when one controls the mind and fixes on Krishna, then one is situated in the transcendental platform, because there's no passion. You understand yourself as the servant of Krishna. So then one is left with pure goodness. So that's the transcendental platform. Vasudeva Sattva means pure goodness. Means goodness that has no passion, no ignorance. Material goodness, there's a little passion, a little ignorance there. Nothing in the material world is pure. The Vasudeva Sattva means that it's pure goodness. There's no passion, there's no material desire, there's no ignorance, there's no thought that I am not Krishna's servant. One is fully convinced I am Krishna's servant, and one has no material desire. Then one is situated on this transcendental platform. That comes when the mind is fixed. So that we gain by that determination, that faith, and that practice. Thus the controlled, self-controlled yogi, constantly engaged in yoga practice, becomes free from all material contamination and achieves the highest state of perfection, happiness, and transcendental loving service to the Lord. So once one comes to that Brahma-Bhuta platform that was explained in the last verse, is by controlling the mind, one comes to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. He understands he is the soul. Then he comes to this platform where he comes to the stage of transcendental loving service to the Lord. So we see, the first stages, through the beginning stages of sadhana bhakti, we're controlling the senses, trying to bring the mind in control. Next, as we come from that, we come to the stage of understanding that we're the eternal servant of Krishna. Like that means in factual realization. We understand it theoretically now, but it's a matter of factual realization we see like that. Then, from that platform, we come to the platform of pure love for Krishna. So one comes from the other. But always it comes back to, he says, that's the self-controlled yogi. Right? It always comes back to this controlling of the mind. Mind, senses, these things. That's the prerequisite. Then these stages, if you keep Krishna as the end, then it gradually moves to this point. Okay. So then, this is now the vision of how this yogi will see. Someone who comes to this platform, what is their vision? How can you practically tell one is on this level? Text 29. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Vishnu Chakravarti here describes that when a yogi is constantly realizing me directly with his senses, he is my worshipper and never falls down. So here, and Prabhupada describes here that he sees everything in connection to Krishna. He knows that everything is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. He is conscious of Krishna. Nothing can exist without Krishna. Krishna is the Lord of everything. So this is the basic principle. He sees Krishna is the Lord, everything's coming from him, he's the source of everything, he's the Lord of everything. Then he sees Krishna in everything. So this is the advanced yogi, in that he sees Krishna in everything. Such a yogi, then text 31, such a yogi who engages in the worshipable service of the Supersoul, knowing that I and the Supersoul are one, remains always in me in all circumstances. He is the perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress. So this is the same point as the Pandita Samadarshana in the fifth chapter, 18th verse. That one sees, when one sees the Supersoul, one sees oneself and one understands Krishna's creation. And he sees all living entities as part of that. So it all comes together. It's not a separate endeavor. So the point is when one actually sees Krishna, one sees the living entities. Therefore, so much emphasis is put in the Vaishnava culture on the Vaishnava etiquette, the dealings with other devotees, proper dealings. And in the Vedic culture, on just proper dealings amongst each other. Because everybody is Krishna's part and parcel. So we must deal with everybody nicely. We're dealing with the Lord nicely. We must also deal with the living entities nicely. Otherwise, we're not seeing properly. We may see, yes, I'm doing for Krishna, I'm doing for Guru. But if we neglect everyone else and deal with them improperly, that means we're not actually seeing. We're only seeing part. Right? We don't see the complete picture. Like that. Because Krishna means all his parts and parcels, his mission, his creation, everything. Everything is going on. And then Krishna makes his point is one who knows his super soul and he are one. This is an important point. That you understand that he and the super soul are non-different. Otherwise, the tendency may be to think that Krishna is one thing, super soul is another. But it's the same personality. Right? It's Krishna. Just he comes with us as the super soul. Right? He comes as a super soul. And in this way he comes with us wherever we're going. Because the point is Krishna manifests according to how we relate to him. Right? How we relate to him, that's how he manifests. Then because Mother Yashoda relates to Krishna as her child, Krishna manifests as a child. Right? Because the cowherd boys relate to him as a friend, he comes as a friend. So in the material world, so that the Lord and the living entity cannot be separated. Right? The Kastuba jewel, Krishna always wears the Kastuba jewel. Kastuba gem is all the living entities. All the jivas are the Kastuba gem. So the Krishna is always with all the living entities. Right? And then he has the Srivatsa, which is Lakshmi, so he's always with the internal potency. So the internal potency, and even when we see him alone, he's still not alone. The internal potency, the full manifestation of that, and the jivas are always with him. You never hear of Krishna without Srivatsa or Kastuba. Always is there. So these are the living entity is always with him. But we are not relating to Krishna. We just see Krishna, God, at best, as someone who should give us what we want. Right? We just ask God, forgive this, give that. So he comes the super soul who sanctions all these activities. He sanctions what we desire. Right? Or according to what we deserve. Sanctions our desires according to what we deserve, according to our activities. So when we turn to him, then we see that it's non-different. Prabhupada gives in the previous verse is that the self-realized soul then worships Govinda within his heart. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is always seen by the devotees, whose eyes are anointed with the pulp of love. He is seen in his eternal form as Shyamasundara, situated within the heart of the devotee. So then, once we realize this is Krishna, then Krishna is situated within the heart. But otherwise, he'll be there as Antarjami, the one situated within, until we come to that platform. So, and then from there, whatever is your mood which you relate to him, he'll relate back. So for the devotee, then one sees Govinda. So one should understand is non-different. Right? Krishna manifests all these different forms, unlimited forms, simply because that's the way people, devotees, are relating to him. Krishna manifests as Vaikunthapati because devotees want to worship him in dasiras and on reverence. So he manifests Vaikuntha. They want to worship him in the five rasas, but still with vidhi. Then that's dwarka. And if they want to worship him in the five rasas without vidhi, that is vajra. So like that, Krishna just manifests. As you surrender, he reciprocates. Krishna said that very clearly in the Gita. As you surrender, he reciprocates. So all the different realms, because the devotees reciprocate with the Lord in different ways. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress. So it's pointed out that the yogi, the devotee, he knows, or the yogi here, he knows that and comparing to his own self. In these situations, people are suffering. I was suffering. They're suffering. So he can see like this. He can see people are suffering, they're happy, they're this or that. But he doesn't get involved or entangled. He's able to actually see others. So this is a sign of advancement, is that you can actually relate to other people. You can start to see them. You can start to appreciate their difficulties. But it's from the platform, but you're not involved. See, someone materialist may also be very concerned about others, but they're very concerned about that relationship that I am concerned. But here the yogi is not concerned. He knows how these are, how people are acting. And then he relates to them how they, for the situation. I don't know if that made any sense. I feel very concerned about other people. And I'll say, I'm very concerned, I understand, or I can relate to all this and that. But the point of this is that the other person will reciprocate with me. So I'm doing it to get that out of them, that reciprocation. I get some satisfaction in this kind of dealing. So I'm getting something out of it. It's not that I'm not getting anything out of it. Right? It's just another way to find some satisfaction in either the senses, the relationships, or that. I either think I'm the center of everything, and in this way I enjoy my relationships and senses, or I'm very concerned about everyone else and I enjoy my relationships and senses. But for the yogi, he can relate to everybody without trying to get them to relate to in a material way to back. Means he can relate to them, but he's not asking them therefore to reciprocate by material dealings. So the concern and all these things are concern that here's this living entity, a spiritual living entity, and they are not happy. Or they think they're materially happy, but it's not actual happiness. Or they're suffering, they're not actually suffering. Right? Their real suffering is that they've detached themselves from Krishna. So in some way or another, you try to help them understand Krishna and all that. But in the dealings, it'll look very compassionate, very caring, very all these different things. But the motive is different. So it carries a different flavor. The flavor is totally different. The one is uplifting, the other is binding. Right? The one has some own motive, and the other has no motive. You're suffering because you don't know Krishna. Let me help you know Krishna. Like that. But there's no expectation of return on that. Well, the other one, you're putting your time, but the result is expected in some way or another. Then the next section here. So this basically explains now the yogi. Now Arjuna then has a doubt about all this. He's heard this, you sit down and you poke your nose and sit in some place out in the woods and you control your mind and you come to this very advanced platform. By this process, this Astanga Yoga process. Now Arjuna has a little difficulty with this, so he expresses this to Krishna here. Arjuna said, O Madhusudana, the system of yoga, which you have summarized, appears impractical and unendurable to me, for the mind is restless and unsteady. For the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong. O Krishna, and to subdue it, I think, is more difficult than controlling the wind. So one problem he's having here is that you're asking me now I'm going to see everybody equally, right? Like that. You're going to see everything in Krishna. Krishna is all this. So Arjuna is going to have to see Yudhishthira and Duryodhana as the same. Like that. So that presents a great problem for him, right? So coming to this platform is going to be very difficult for him. So he says that. So he wants another something to be, how do you say? Yeah. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that that the point is that it's the intelligence is said to be like a needle, that it can point and just poke and just enter into things very nicely. But if the mind is obstinate, it's like trying to poke a needle into a piece of iron. So even though it's very sharp, it still is very difficult to get to do. So then Krishna then says here, Lord Krishna said, text 35, O mighty armed son of Kunti, it is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind, but it is possible by suitable practice and by detachment. For one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work, but he whose mind is controlled and he who strives by appropriate means is assured of success. That is my opinion. So Krishna agrees with this. The mind is very difficult like that. But he says that you must strive to control. In the previous verses he says you must have that determination, that faith. Then you will be successful. Otherwise, if not, then you won't get anywhere. But he does say, yes, I do agree it's very difficult. So then Prabhupada points out here is that that very powerful is that we hear. The most powerful is we hear about Krishna's glories. We engage ourselves in activities. Then the mind becomes detached from the material activities and attached to Krishna. So then we see here, again, it brings it back to this point of this nishkam karma. Prabhupada here sums this up. The Supreme Personality of Godhead declares that one who does not accept the proper treatment to detach the mind from material engagement can hardly achieve success in self-realization. Trying to practice yoga while engaging the mind in material enjoyment is like trying to ignite a fire while pouring water on it. Therefore, one must control the mind by engaging it constantly in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Unless one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, he cannot steadily control the mind. A Krishna conscious person easily achieves the result of yoga practice without separate endeavor. But a yoga practitioner cannot achieve success without becoming Krishna conscious. So the point comes, as is being brought out in this chapter, is that by practice of yoga, you can come to that result that you come to by the practice of bhakti. But if you actually study it, only the devotee can control the mind and senses and have that determination. So therefore, the Ashtanga Yoga practice is not as good as following the direct practice of bhakti. Though the Ashtanga Yoga practice, if practiced in the proper way, culminates in bhakti. But by following from the beginning bhakti and engaging the senses in works of devotion, then that is superior. Because if we notice we're following rules and regulations. So many people are following rules and regulations. But that does not make a devotion. You learn to sit properly in asana. That does not necessarily mean there's anything devotional going on. You stop the breathing, right? That's not necessarily a devotional activity. It's sacrifice. All these things are sacrifice. So one is purified, but it's not devotion. Then you pull all the senses in. It's still, nothing has been done for Krishna. You fix the mind in one point, but that means just one point. It doesn't mean that there's anything in that point. Right? It's just simply a point. The example is given by Patanjali. It's like the pouring of honey or oil. Like you notice if you pour honey out of a bottle, it comes out very wide. You know, you have a big mouth bottle, 2-3 inches wide. The honey comes out like 2 or 3 inches wide, then immediately it goes down into very thin, very, very thin. So like if you hold the bottle up and you're pouring honey, after that first bit has come out, you'll see it's very wide at the mouth still, but as it comes down almost like a needle at the end. It's the example is given like that, is that the senses are all over the place, you pull them all in, and then you just focus on one point. There's nothing at the other side of that point in Tarana. It's just you focus. So up to now there's been no service, nothing. Then, once you can do that, then you take the Paramatma and stick him at that point. Then we can say we're starting some that possibly could be some service. If the yogi knows that the Super Soul is the supreme goal, then at this point he's concentrating on the Lord. But otherwise, if he doesn't, Paramatma has just been described, you're supposed to meditate on him. That's all. It's just, you know, it's the next rule that he's supposed to do, the next stage. So until he actually, in samadhi, realizes the Lord and understands he's the Lord's servant, only then bhakti begins. But then he starts on the platform of bhakti, no kanista madhyam stuff. He just starts. In other words, you go through this system that brings you up to the Brahma Bhuta platform. When you start devotional service, you start as an uttam. You start from the platform of bhava. So you've gone through this whole mundane system of yoga that brought you to the purification platform, to the Brahma Bhuta. Then you see the Lord. Then you begin your devotional practice. Right? Now, going through that is not easy, especially in this age. And Arjuna is rejecting it in the last age. In Dwapara, he's already rejecting it. Because actually the system is for Satyayuga. But the principles of it remain. The devotee is still following the rules and regulations, learning to situate himself and properly in service and not run all over the place. You know, learns to control the senses, learns to fix his mind and becomes vyavasayatmika buddhi, learns to see Krishna in everything he does until he comes to the point where he's totally absorbed in thinking of Krishna. Then he comes to that platform of seeing Krishna and pure love. It's the same thing is done. But we're just doing it through the process of bhakti, sadhana bhakti, rather than astanga yoga. Principles are exactly the same. Okay. Then we have... So now, Arjuna then has another point. Because Krishna says he who strives by appropriate means assured of success. So that Krishna is described so much. So he's described for us appropriate means this nishkam karma. We're going to do that. That will bring us to the Brahma Bhuta platform. Then, seeing Krishna, we will take up pure and alloyed devotional service. Right? So our process, our proper process, this is appropriate means, is nishkam karma. He was describing Ashtanga Yoga. But principles are the same. So now Arjuna has another doubt, like that, about what happens. Okay, you've explained this very elevated platform of someone coming to the perfectional platform. What if someone doesn't make it? Text 37. Arjuna said, O Krishna, what is the destination of the unsuccessful transcendentalist? Who in the beginning takes to the process of self-realization with faith, but who later desists due to worldly mindedness, and thus does not attain perfection in mysticism. O mighty armed Krishna, does not such a man who is bewildered from the path of transcendence, fall away from both spiritual and material success, and perish like a riven cloud, with no position in any sphere? So he's taken up spiritual practices, he's not enjoying his senses, and then he doesn't get the results of the spiritual, so what does he end up with? He just ends up with nothing? And just like in a cloud, you have a big cloud and a little piece breaks off and then it just gets dissolved in the air. So he's worried that, will this happen? This is my doubt, O Krishna. I ask you to dispel it completely, but for you, no one is to be found who can destroy this doubt. So Krishna only can know because he knows past, present, and future. So only he can answer. So then Krishna then says here, first he allays Krishna's fear, Arjuna's fear, that someone will be lost. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, this is text 40, Son of Parta, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities does not meet with destruction either in this world or in the spiritual world. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. So when he's saying here about the transcendentalist, this means, or who's doing auspicious activities, it means anybody who is on the transcendental path. Whatever process you're following, if Krishna is the end, so it's transcendental, it's never lost. Otherwise, the Astanga yogi, if he stops halfway through, he doesn't get 50% benefit. He's back to zero. But the bhakti yogi, he makes it to 50%. Then when he takes it up again, he starts from 51. It's not lost. So it means anyone who's done anything in connection with service to the Lord, it's actually transcendental connection. That is never lost. He is not lost. So he's pointing out this so that Arjuna will not be in anxiety. Right? It makes it very clear. Then he goes on to explain the two kinds of yogis. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people, or into a family of rich aristocracy. So this is describing, so you find unsuccessful yogis are in two categories. One who, after short practice, they didn't advance so much. And then those after long practice had fallen. So this is for those of short practice. Krishna says that they go to the heavenly planets. Then, Baladeva explains that, Prabhupada explains, the real purpose of yoga practice is to achieve the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, as explained in the last verse of this chapter. But those who do not persevere to such an extent, and who fail because of material allurements, are allowed by the grace of the Lord to make full utilization of the material propensities. And after that, they are given opportunities to live prosperous lives in righteous or aristocratic families. Those who are born in such families may take advantage of the facilities and try to elevate themselves to full Krishna consciousness. So one practiced for a while, and then one became allured by the senses. So then Krishna gives them full facility to enjoy the senses. They go to the heavenly planets. But after some time, Baladev, Vidyabhushan points out, is that they develop a distaste for this and return back to the earth, you know, and then take birth in a family of righteous people, which means like in Brahmins, Suchinam, or of wealthy and pious merchants, Srimatam. Then one continues. Because in this position, one has the freedom and the facilities that one doesn't have to work like a mudha, but one has time to study, associate, and these things that one could take advantage and progress, continue one's progress as a yogi. Unfortunately, one has to be very careful. I mean, one has to be careful of not becoming unfortunate, become proud of being born in a Brahmin family, or become proud of one's wealth and just engage in sense gratification. So these families are for those who are coming back from the heavenly planets, and they have so much piety, and so there's not, they come here and they come back into this very pious kind of situation. Then the second is, or if unsuccessful after long practice of yoga, it's text 42, he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. On taking such a birth, he receives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O son of Kuru. By virtue of divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yoga principles, even without seeking them. Such an inquisitive transcendentalist stands always above the ritualistic principles of the scriptures. And when the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor in making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then ultimately achieving perfection after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. So here we see there's a difference. Is the one goes to the heavenly planets and spends some time there, and after that comes back here and is born just into, you know, a righteous or aristocratic family. Not necessarily devotees, but pious. But someone who has been practicing for a long time devotional service doesn't become perfect. They take birth in the family of devotees. Now they hear from the very beginning about devotional service. Then they can take that up very, very seriously. So Krishna makes these two distinctions. So the families of devotees, the children there, are specifically meant for this spiritual realization. They're not meant for other things. That's why they've come to these families, specifically for this. So then that should be encouraged here. Like that here. Prabhupada explains, from this his life it is understood that transcendental endeavors or the practice of yoga never go in vain. Oh, this is Bharat Maharaj, yes. By the grace of the Lord, the transcendentalist gets repeated opportunities for complete perfection in Krishna consciousness. Yeah, it says here, the yogi begins where he left off in his previous life. Jada Bharat is an excellent example of this principle. So Jada Bharat, he came to a very advanced platform, but then he became deviated. So then he took birth in a family where then he could fully practice all these things very, very nicely, right from the beginning. And then we see he perfected his life at that time. So he didn't finish what he was doing, but he continued very nicely from where he left off and perfected his life. So Krishna gives these opportunities. Like that. Says he's being transcendental to ritualistic activities means the interest is in the devotional aspects. He's already done this karma, done the jnana, done these things. Now one is interested in the devotional activities. And then, what's his name? Burijan Prabhu here points out that there is... Yeah, he's saying that here that it may take so many lifetimes here. Because if someone's born in just a Brahmin family or an aristocratic family, it may take them more time. But one who's born in the devotee family, then because right from the beginning they get a deep impression of Krishna consciousness, then it's much more quick. So it's natural. Krishna's just reciprocating with what one wanted. One did for some time. One became distracted in material desire, goes to the heavenly planets, enjoys, comes back in an aristocratic or righteous family, and then from there starts again, but it may take him some births because determination wasn't as great. But someone who is coming, performing for a long time, does not perfect, comes back into the family of devotees, then from the very beginning, they're introduced to Krishna consciousness. So for them, then things go very quickly. So then in the last two verses here, then Krishna points out the topmost yogi. Means after all this, then he's pointing out. A yogi is greater than the ascetic, greater than the empiricist, and greater than the fruitive worker. Therefore, O Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. And of all yogis, one with great faith who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. So we see that those who are pious or on the path of sacrifice, then the yogi, one who is in connection with the Lord, is greater than them. And then of the yogis, then one who is a pure devotee of the Lord is the greatest. Because all his activities, everything he does is always connected with him. So Krishna says, that is the best of yogis. So of all the paths, all the different things that are there, the one who can come to this platform, that is the best. That is the best here. Yeah, here Prabhupada sums this up here very nicely. The culmination of all kinds of yoga practices lies in bhakti yoga. All other yogas are but means to come to the point of bhakti in bhakti yoga. Yoga actually means bhakti yoga. All other yogas are progressions towards the destination of bhakti yoga. In other words, they're just parts of the progress of the bhakti path, but they just get called by the names of those who get stuck in those places. From the beginning of karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga is a long way to self-realization. Karma yoga without fruitive results is the beginning of this path. When karma yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, the stage is called jnana yoga. When jnana yoga increases in meditation on the super soul by different physical processes, and the mind is on him, it is called astanga yoga. And when one surpasses astanga yoga and comes to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is called bhakti yoga, the culmination. Finally, bhakti yoga is the ultimate goal. But to analyze bhakti yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas. So this is why they're explained. If you want to understand very technical details of how bhakti yoga works, you have to understand the other yogas. Therefore, Krishna's explained them. Because you will find the elements in karma yoga in bhakti yoga in the beginning stages. You'll find the elements of jnana yoga in bhakti at the next stage. You'll find the elements of meditation and absorption in the Supreme at the next stage, the more advanced level of bhakti, bhakti yoga process. In other words, the kanista, the madhyam, and the bhava bhakta. Then one comes to the platform of pure and alloyed devotional service of bhakti yoga, so prema. So it's the details are the same. Therefore, it's studied here. Right? It means we can relate to the yoga, we can relate to this, that, karma, jnana, but here Krishna is pointing it out. It's all part of bhakti. So he's explaining it, not that he's expecting us to go out into the forest and sit on a deer skin, but we understand the methods that are going on here, the steps that one is going through to control the senses and mind and fix it on the Lord. So this is being given here. So then Prabhupada mentions here that bhajate, which is we're used in this word verse, is significant. It has its root in the word, in the verb bhaj, which was, means when there's a need of service. So he's pointing out worship doesn't fully give across the meaning, because it's actually the relationship, the exchange here. Like that. Because you can avoid worshiping a demigod or a great person, though it'll be considered uncultured. But you can do avoid it. But you can't avoid worshiping the Supreme Lord. That's just nonsense. Because we are the Lord's servants. That is the need of the living entity. That's the actual relationship. So he's pointing out that is. So then Prabhupada explains here, Krishna, the ideal yogi, it is by great fortune that one comes to Krishna consciousness on the path of bhakti yoga to become well situated according to the Vedic direction. The ideal yogi concentrates his intention on Krishna, who is called Shyamasundara, who is as beautifully colored as a cloud, whose lotus-like face is as effulgent as the sun, whose dress is brilliant with jewels and whose body is flower garlanded. Illuminating all sides is his gorgeous luster, which is called the Brahma-jyoti. He incarnates in different forms such as Rama, Nrisimha, Varaha, and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he descends like a human being as the son of Mother Yashoda. And he is known as Krishna, Govinda, and Vasudeva. He is the perfect child, husband, friend, and master. And he is full with all opulences and transcendental qualities. One remains fully conscious of these features of the Lord. He is called the highest yogi. So that ends chapter 6. any questions or comments?
Mind brings different kinds of thoughts and concepts of the so they control the mind, not here in it. But is there any state when the mind doesn't bring this thought to thought?
Generally, we'll find that the mind will always bring something. But if one comes to, you know, this very advanced platform, especially in the platform of bhava, these things are very minimal. The main obstacle on the platform of bhava, which is Uttamadhikari platform, is that one actually, basically takes credit for one's advanced platform. You know, one is advanced, one is an Uttamadhikari, and one thinks of oneself as one. That's the main result. So even there, that is still the mind. The mind's desire for distinction, adoration, profit. But I mean, it's a very subtle thing. See, the platform before, nadanam, najanam, nasundarim, we're talking about illusory things. That we think we're going to be happy with wealth, followers, this and that. We think those are going to make us happy. Somewhere on the Brahma-Bhuta platform doesn't think these will make them happy. No, but there may be some thought that I am an advanced devotee. Like that. I am, you know, something special or unique. Which is true. So the thought is not by facts and figures wrong. But that mentality Krishna does not appreciate. So then one can't advance any further, one gets stuck there. And until one gives that up, one can spend a little bit of time that way. We see an example of this in his pastimes, in the Rasa dance. And the gopis thought, we're the most fortunate women in the universe. It's a fact. But Krishna doesn't want his devotees to be proud of their special position. Right? Because Krishna is not proud of his special position as God. So why should he associate with people who are going to be proud of their special position? Right? So he expects the devotees like him to be like him. And he awards like that. Right? So then what that little bit is there. So the more one advances, the less is there. But something is there, and the senses go. One sees the senses meet the sense objects. Right? Something goes by to eat. The eyes just look. Like the mind is looking good, not good, edible, not edible, you know, something we want, don't want. But the yogi understands is that's just the senses meeting the sense objects, so he takes no interest in this process. So then immediately the mind loses, just goes to something else. Right? But if he takes interest, then the mind gets very serious about that and then brings in the intelligence, okay, how to get a hold of that. Like that. But it just sees, it's the senses meeting the sense object. It's just the way they work. But he takes no interest. So it's not, it's also, the mind's controlled. I mean, when one comes to this platform, it's not a great disturbance. You know, it's just some disturbance, naturally. But it's not as much as when the mind is totally inimical. Because the mind wants to be the controller and the enjoyer. And so then the process of regulation then hampers what I can do. God is the, you know, Bhokta Ram Yagyatapa Samsarva Loka Maheshwara Suridam Sarva Bhutam. He's the enjoyer. He's the controller. He's the friend of everyone. So that kind of like blows my whole endeavor. Because I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. When I actually get to an elevated position, then I start thinking I'm friend of everyone. I give in charity, I open hospitals, I do so many things, because I'm the Sridham Sarvabhutanam. Right? And I'm very knowledgeable and I'm very kind to everyone because I explain everything to them. Like this. So I become Sridham Sarvabhutanam. So when we find out I'm not and Krishna is, then doubts may come up. The mind, you know, says, hey, wait a minute, you know, I've been in this seat for unlimited lifetimes, and, you know, how is it that someone else, I find out that this has been bogus and someone else is there. So the mind, in the beginning, may not always appreciate. So we're thinking one thing, very nice and all that. Suddenly the mind just comes along with this nonsense. We just have to disregard it. We just understand the mind is just interacting with the you know, whatever's around, the senses and all that, you know, and misusing the intelligence to its own advantage. So we just ignore those things. So in the beginning that's difficult because we've identified with this mind for so long that when the mind says something, we think this is us speaking, right? When the mind says, you know, hey, what about this? We think that is us, but it's not. Because then you can see that then another voice can come in and say, no, according to the rules, this. That's the intelligence. Right? So the mind and the intelligence can sit there, go on talking for hours, you know. But neither of them are us. Right? Because we're the pure spirit soul. So we just, unless it has something to do with Krishna, we just ignore it. And if you ignore it, you see very quickly the conversation stops. Like somebody's talking to you and you're showing interest, they may talk for hours. They start talking to you and you show zero interest, generally they kind of like change the topic and excuse themselves and go away. So like that, the mind's like that. You just ignore it and it kind of like learns after a while that these things aren't so good. You know? But it's very clever. It'll bring it up at times when you don't think. How it transforms one into the other is very clever. You know? So you just have to always be on guard. You know? But Krishna says, with practice and this determination, detachment, one will get there, one will progress, but one must have that determination. Right? And that determination is gained by association of devotees and hearing. When we hear about the process, we hear about the glories of the Lord, then we can see it's very nice. We're not losing anything, we're gaining. You know? And then just like that. Is that making sense? Anything else? Yes.
Where is that determination? It's something that you just, you say you're going to do it, or is it something that you can actually develop? Go side by side with faith. What is it to determine? Is it just a point of someone saying, I'm going to do it, and sticking to it? How does one develop the determination? How does one get the
basically, from what I understand, it's from here's a description of what it is. Sri Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, all kinds of intelligence, the best is intelligence focused on bhakti yoga. In bhakti yoga, one's intelligence becomes single-pointed or fixed in determination. One thinks, the instructions of my spiritual master to worship the personality of Godhead by chanting, remembering, serving his lotus feet, and so on, are my only sadhana, my only sadhya, sadhya means goal, my only livelihood. I am unable to give up these instructions either in the stage of practice or in the stage of perfection. They alone are my object of desire and my only responsibility. Besides them, I can desire no other responsibility, not even in my dreams. It is all the same to me whether I feel happy or unhappy, or whether my personal existence is eradicated or not. And Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavatam 2.4, 3-4 purport. The whole matter is concluded in the Bhagavad Gita 2.41 as Vyavasayatmika Bhuti, or the absolute path of perfection. And Sri Baladeva Vibhushan defines this as Bhagavat Archana Rupaika Nishkama Karamabhir Vishuddha Chitta, accepting transcendental loving service to the Lord as a prime duty, free from fruit of reaction. So, accepting service to the Lord free from free from fruitive desires, that's determination. So basically we get that by hearing association, and we hear about this and then we get the interest to do it and we endeavor for it. So
it's
parallel with faith. The whole thing is ultimately the devotional process is faith. You're just dealing with faith. So it's just that different stages bring the faith to a different level. In the first stage, you just have faith that there is some higher purpose in life. And then when you hear more, that faith increases where you have faith in the devotees, those who follow this path. Then you associate more. Then you have faith in the advanced devotees who can give that direction. Then one follows that direction, and one has faith then in the process, and one takes up the process. Then one has faith that unless I remove these anarthas or the material desires in my heart, I'm not going to progress. I can't get the goal. Then one has faith deepens. One becomes fixed like this. What is saying here? Vyavasayatmika Bhuti. I become fixed that service to the order of the spiritual master for the purpose of pleasing Krishna, that is my goal. Nothing else. That to worship Krishna through these devotional processes, as ordered by the spiritual master, that's my life and soul. Nothing else. So the faith is gained to that point. Then the faith goes more gives up attachment to distinction, adoration, and profit, because one thinks that those things are going to make me happy. So he gives up that. So his faith is greater. He knows it now only by serving Krishna. And then, because of that, one gains a deeper taste for Krishna consciousness. And one's faith increases more in Krishna as an individual person, and his qualities and all this. And one starts to become very attached to him. As that faith develops more, then one wants to serve. Like, just like one heard about Krishna and one comes into the association of devotees. So now here's the thing, you've heard so much about Krishna, you get that faith, that now you want to enter into the spiritual association, enter into the spiritual realm and serve there. One is qualified. Right? If the faith is enough, the devotees will let one associate, come close by. Faith is not very great, one won't let. So faith has to be enough. So same way, entering into the spiritual realm, that faith has to be enough. And then that faith increases more, it turns into pure love.
Okay, it's like, you could just say that's just faith. But it feels, I can't understand that. The determination that, you know, I will take this all in my life, and so I accept this and like that, but then it may be when Maya comes, then there has to become determination to say no. Otherwise the fate is carrying you on anyway in that process. It seems like determination would be against Maya. Yeah.
It's both. Prabhupada says that open the chapter. With this point, what is called renunciation should know to be the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme, or Son of Pandu. For one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. So, Prabhupada points out here, Krishna conscious person is simultaneously a sannyasi and a yogi. So it's the one means the other. For the devotee, you give up Maya means you're accepting Krishna. They happen at the same time. Or as you accept Krishna, you're giving up Maya. So the faith means that you have that faith that this is going to make me happy. Only this. Sticking to the order of the spiritual master to serve the Supreme Lord, that only will make me happy. Otherwise, it's not going to be like that. So faith is the basis of the whole thing. Faith started first. Right? Then we see Bhajana Kriya is next. No, excuse me, Sadhu Sangha. Sadhu Sangha then is, from Sadhu Sangha then you understand to that you must advance more. So you take up, you take initiation, you practice seriously the principles of Krishna consciousness. By Sadhu Sangha, then you see what is good qualities and you understand how to give up bad qualities. So you do that. Then by association you see that others are very determined and fixed in their service. You also endeavor for those qualities. You see others have a taste, then you endeavor for that. You see others are attached to Krishna. Others are serving Krishna in the eternal lila. You gain that. Others have, you know, love for Krishna. One enters one. So that stays. You know, that's there throughout. Bhajana Kriya. The rules and regulations that are there in these for the sadhaka, there's rules and regulations. Then you come to the path of Raganuga. So there also there's certain things you should do and not, because it's still sadhana. You know, so there's still the practice of this bhajana. Then when you come to Bhav Sadhana, there's still a sadhana there. But it's free from all the, it doesn't have the, how you say, it doesn't require the external rituals to perform. Because now one has come to this platform of dhyan and samadhi, you know, this yoga rudha, advanced yoga. So then one can stop work and just do that. Or one can continue to work and do that. Generally to set example, they don't. But one doesn't need to do it. One is, for one's purification, one does not need to do it. Like that. Though Krishna says even the great souls are purified. Because it pleases him that they do it for example. So therefore, even in their own bhav sadhana, they'll advance quicker if they're taking the platform of madhyam and preaching. Both will advance very nicely, but one is very pleasing. One is even more perfect. And then by this, then one comes to the platform of prema. And then it's just prema. Anartha Nivriti, you're getting rid of the anartas at the stage of the Kanista stage. You're getting rid of the anartas, Dhanam Janam and Sundarim. In other words, you're getting rid of the gross sense gratification and any difficulties with following the four regulative principles, following the sadhana, all these different things. Then when one gets rid of the gross, then one becomes steady. And then as a madhyama, then one has to get rid of the subtle, distinction, adoration, and profit. Then when one comes to the platform of bhava, one has to see that we discussed before in Mataji's question, is that one is not considered I'm advanced. One is advanced, but then one is thinking, yes, I am advanced. I am guru of Vaishnavas. Like that, then that is not good. That's an obstacle. So that's, as such, an anartha. But it's very subtle and it's very small comparison to the big, big picture. And we see that even in Vama Vrindavan, those who are there, who are coming up, not the Nitya Siddhas, then all these pastimes are to move very subtle points. You know, the forest fire and all the different demons and the situations that are there. Just to remove very subtle, subtle things. As it says, by hearing the Bhagavatam, the bad things in their heart are reduced practically to nil. It doesn't say to nil, practically to nil. So from practically to nil is done in Gokul Vrindavan, in Krishna's pastimes. All these different things are there. And that purifies completely. Then one is qualified now to go to, you know, Golok Vrindavan, to Vraja Vrindavan. So even in those stages, it's a little nirvanartha. Then being fixed, one is fixed in this service like that. Then one becomes more fixed in performing the devotional activities because one has a taste, right? I'm following because I'm supposed to. I'm determined to follow the spiritual master's order. That's fixed. So I'm chanting, I'm hearing, I'm doing everything. And now if I come to Ruchi, I have a taste for it. So how much more I'll be fixed? Not only I have the determination because my spiritual master said, but now I have the taste for it also. So I get a great taste out of chanting. So along with the determination to have that, you're more fixed. Then one becomes more attached to Krishna as a person. So now these are all activities concerning him, so I want to do them even more. I'm more fixed. Then Bob Sadhana, then you're in the eternal pastimes. How much more fixed you become in your service. You see, now instead of just seeing, you know, God brothers and God sisters and all that around, now you see, you know, Rupa Goswami and others performing their service. How much more fixed? Right? That, until we come to, and then when we're in the spiritual realm, that further association with the Nitya Siddhas, like very serious association with them, one becomes totally fixed. And then one moves into prema. So taste, one gains a taste by hearing and chanting. But now we're hearing, we have a taste for those things connected to Krishna. His name, his prasadam, his service, all these different things. So then that deepens even more when that taste is of Krishna himself. And then when we can actually serve Krishna, that taste deepens more. Then we come to the platform of Bhava-prema, even more deep. An attachment, we're attached to Krishna. Then when we serve Krishna in Bhava, in the association of the eternal associates, we get even more attachment. We come to what's called Purva-rag, complete attachment to Krishna. Then it goes into prema and just continues. And rati, or attachment for Krishna. Bhava is also called rati. So it's attachment to Krishna. There's no attachment to the material world because this is Brahma-bhuta. So now, in Bhav, you're attached to Krishna. But this is the first of 10 platforms of prema. So the first is Bhava. The second is prema. But generally we stop there because that's all the material body can handle. The body can't handle the ecstasies that are manifest by someone who's beyond that. You know, sneha and all these other things, and up to mahabhav. The body can't handle it. Prema, you know, it's, you know, one thing is coming, one sense this way, another sense that way. But when all the senses are in ecstasy at once, this body has difficulty dealing with that. Right? I mean, we see Lord Chaitanya's son, his ecstasy, sometimes they would find him, he'd be stretched, he'd be 9 feet long. Other times they'd find him, all his limbs had pulled inside his body, like Kurma, like Jagannath. Right? Jagannath, all his limbs had pulled inside out of ecstasy. So generally one would find that the material body doesn't fare too well under these situations. Right? I mean, they used to, you know, like if you take somebody and stretch him to 9 feet, generally it doesn't do so great for the health. You know, or take and stuff their arms inside their trunk and stuff the legs back inside. It most likely would not be accepted by medical science as a way to encourage health. So these things can't be tolerated by the body. So it's only explained up to prema, basically. You know it's beyond. But bhava is just the first stage. So that rati or attachment then it deepens more into prema, deepens more into sneha, deepens more like this until it gets to mahabhava. That's the deepest. Like that. And then prema is there, that love is there, and that just continues through. So we see once one comes to one stage, the next it just continues all the way through. So faith is always underlying that whole process. Like that. Does that make any sense?
Mentioned that in this chapter, he was reading that there were three things. There was faith, there was determination, and there was also the practice. These things together have to be there. Which seemed like kind of interrelatable. If you don't have practice, then obviously you don't have determination. If you don't have determination, you won't maintain your faith. But it appears that determination is a kind of strengthening agent that strengthens your faith and makes you stick to the practice and keep fighting it, like strengthening.
Yeah, it's very good. You generally see many of these, I think we discussed it yesterday, is they're interrelated terms of basically the same thing. Just different angles. You know, you want to bring out some different angle in it. Because everything has different angles. You know, how you look at it. You know, like we want to decorate the room. Then you talk about curtains. Now we can talk about the length of the curtains, how long they are and the waist and how much pleats they're going to be made. So these two are like a tailoring thing. So then another aspect is just the colors, you know, or texture. That you just buy the fabric. It's not a matter of tailoring. Then how we're actually going to hang them. So that's a mechanical function, you know, an engineering function. So it's all the same thing of beautifying the room with curtains, but it's different aspects that bring out. So many times you see the same thing is then brought out in these different ways, as you pointed here. Oops, we're in the wrong chapter. Shastra, that whenever there's something you want to find, you can't find it. When you think, I know where that is, you can never find it. See throughout the Gita, Krishna is giving definitions. One point he's making the point, another place he's giving the definition of what each point means. So if we study, because we see that Krishna is still only making the same point. But now with this, he's brought it very much to the platform of devotional service. It means that in the beginning, Arjuna is talking karma, he's talking about how you purify, you do your work, but with detachment. Then he's starting to talk more about the knowledge. And then we see that there's more aspects of the knowledge, and even describing the fifth chapter, the Karma Yoga Action in Krishna Consciousness. He's explaining the same things in the third chapter, but now there's more emphasis on the details of what that knowledge is and which one does and the qualities that one has to perform it. Then that brings it farther in here, that realization on the Brahma Buddha platform, and then coming to the platform of pure devotional service, so bhakti. So he brings that out. Because in the next chapters, it'll move right into devotional service. The next six chapters, this finishes the first section, the first third. The next will be predominantly on devotional service. So it's just emphasizing the same thing, just in different places. Like here, the yoga practice itself, just when he's describing it, the stages of the practice, 1, 2, 3, at least within these 22 verses, where he gives the different stages, he's explained the whole process completely, each time, in each little group of verses. But it's from a different angle, he's describing it. Like that, emphasizing, bringing out a different point, emphasizing this, and what's the benefits in this, you know? Like that, you see it's the same thing. Like if I describe the length of the curtains, you know, then it looks very nice, or the color, or the pleats, it all looks very nice. But one would think, well, so many different things, but it's all the same purpose, just to make it look nice. So the same way that Krishna's describing all these different things, simply with the purpose to point out that this is what he wants to do, because it pleases him. So you follow the activities with knowledge of him, with that detachment, in connection with Krishna. Then that's perfect. He's not saying anything else in the whole Gita. But he's bringing out the different levels of advancement in that, and different emphasis on the karma, or the jnana, or the bhakti. Like that, in the different sections, different chapters, different verses. So it's, one studies like that and sees that the connection between all those, like I think we discussed yesterday, about the Panipata. Isn't that yesterday? We discussed that it's described in having the desire to know, like that. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. I want you to inquire, once you want to know. Who am I? Why am I here? What is it? Why am I suffering? That's the first stage. That's the first symptom of human life. The same thing then naturally creates that you approach somebody. Then you'll approach the spiritual master. Right? In the verse it says pranipata. But and then he'll say approach a spiritual master. Right? Then the next is he says that you'll inquire. He says inquiry. So submissive inquiry. So because of the interest, you'll be submissive in your inquiry, because you want to know. You're not challenging. Like that. So all these different submission, approaching the spiritual master, the desire to know are the same thing. They're just different aspects of the same thing. So as Janai Vas pointed out here, that determination, you know, that practice, like this, they're all the same thing. Just different, you know, like fear, giving up fear, being fixed, being steady, having one point of determination, they all also mean exactly the same thing. Just giving different angles of it. Fear is either the bodily fear, so we're still attached to the body, so we have to give that up, or fear of our relationship with the Lord, which is the impersonal concept. That has to, when those are given up, then one then becomes steady, nishtha, like that, in devotional service. You know, when one's, and that means one's mind is fixed in one place. Right? If we're steady, it's only because the mind is fixed. If it's not fixed, then the mind is everywhere, and one's not steady. So they're all connected. Just because it's different angles bringing in. In this way, then we have 700 shlokas.
Okay. I was questioning that, I think, yesterday, when you do something without attachment, you just say for Krishna, you do some kind of attachment, you're doing it above the sense of getting any result or the sense of duty, but how can you do that? It's still a duty, isn't it? If you, unless you have actual real attachment, how can you, it's still a sense of duty if you're doing it without attachment.
No, the sense of duty is there. That's the point. Do the duty. When it's, see, when the predominance is because it's a sense of duty, then we'll say the in the bhakti process, because we're just talking about devotional service. But when it's we're doing it because it's a sense of duty, I must do it, then the aspect of the nishkarma, nishkam karma yoga is the more prominent element. When it's because we understand I'm not the body, I'm serving a Krishna, the material world is a place of misery, all these, in other words, the knowledge aspect is more, then this would be the jnana yoga, even though we're still performing the duties. And when it's just, I'm doing this because Krishna likes it. Maybe a duty, but it's been given as a duty because it pleases Krishna, rather than it's just a duty and I'm doing this service, must do, the shastras say, and, you know, like that. So it's just, where is the emphasis? The activity will be exactly the same, performing prescribed duties. And it's just whether the consciousness is more fixed on the aspect of doing the duty, or of the knowledge behind why I'm doing the duty, or the devotion to Krishna in doing the duty. That's why Prabhupada points out, it's ideal that one understands the whole yoga process, all the different stages and the technical details, so that one can elevate oneself through all this, because it all happens in bhakti. Though it may not happen in the external form of like Ashtanga yoga, but the principles on which the detail of Ashtanga is practiced are practiced in bhakti. The details of karma yoga, the details of jnana yoga are practiced in bhakti. You know, the principles are there. The details change. Did I say the details of practice? No, it's the principles of practice. The details change. Like that. So that's why it's all being presented. You know, Bhurijan calls this the yoga ladder. So it started in this second, basically in the third chapter with the karma. Then the fourth, we went into jnana. The fifth, the combination with a strong emphasis on the jnana. Then in here, we're starting with that and going into bhakti through the Ashtanga yoga practice. So he's showing the ladder. But for the devotee, he goes to the same stages without having to go through the externals of it, all within the devotional process. It's just where the emphasis is. So in the beginning, of course, we do still have some attachments, some this and that, and we're just pushing ourselves to do the duty. Because we're only used to doing duties because we want the result. So now we have to practice that abhyas. You know, we must have the determination. We're going to get, by doing this, there'll definitely be spiritual advancement. I want to be happy. I'm actually going to be happy this way.
That
expectation of results
will be given up.
There's no need of that. We give up expectation of spiritual results because that's what Krishna wants us to situate ourselves. You can only reciprocate with Krishna and be an instrument for Krishna if one is situated on the transcendental platform. So the more we're situated, then the more nicely we can be an instrument. So we want to become more of an instrument for Krishna's pleasure. So we need to have, his activities are eternal. He is eternal. So unless our mentality and consciousness is on that eternal platform, how it's going to work? You know?
It seems to be sometimes we you start from the top, but you say, we should just work Krishna without any result. You can embrace. replace me or he can kick me away. I don't want that. But here we're actually working for some spiritual result, because unless I get spiritualized, I won't be able to serve Krishna properly. So it's like a catch 22 there.
Well, he's saying anything to do with spiritual. He's saying give up material results.
Yeah, but when we design to become a spiritual result, then this contradiction, you can kick me or you can embrace me, whatever you like.
No, but that's the same desire. Because what is the desire there? They simply want to please Krishna. So if by kicking me that makes you happy, then please do it and you become happy. If by embracing me that makes you happy, then please you do it and make yourself happy. So he's not giving up something there. He's fixed in something.
But I'm doing it for myself. I'm doing it for my spiritual advancement. I'm expecting some spiritual results.
Yes, then that's just more on the platform of Jnana. Like that. That's just more the Jnana Yoga. And Bhakti is just it pleases Krishna. That. But it's not a problem with that, because it still is sat. We see nayanam galara suru daraya varanam gajjanu hudaya gira. When will the day come when these symptoms will manifest? Because then we know we're advancing in devotional service. Because at that platform, then I can start to seriously serve Krishna, because that's the platform of bhava. So it's like at that platform, then things start getting really serious. Right? Then you, the one before that. He's asking Krishna to pick him up from this material ocean and place this at his lotus feet. So that is so that we can be situated as a servant. We're not saying where you're placing us. I will be situated in the service. We're just saying, make us your servant. That's the point. We just want to become a servant, because then we can do something proper. So these are proper spiritual understanding and desire, because that's what Krishna is wanting. He's telling Arjuna, this whole thing is get him just to fight for Krishna, because Krishna wants him. So he has to come to that platform where he can be a proper instrument. Okay. So we'll see. Let's say sometimes there's a service you're doing for the first time, and you know, either you don't know much about it or you're in anxiety about it and you're really worried about it, and then somehow or another the results come out really wonderful. Now then, if you think after that, wow, yeah, I can do this, no problem. And many times you find the next time you can't do it at all. Because the first time you were just an instrument, you were dependent upon Krishna. So now because our heart is not clean, we still think we're the doer and this and that. I can't continue in that service. So that's the kind of service that's pleasing to Krishna. Not necessarily because it was a wonderful result, but just because the consciousness is right. So because my heart is impure, I can't serve in this way, which is pleasing to Krishna. So because my purpose is to please Krishna, therefore, then we're trying to develop these proper qualities in which we're qualified to serve Krishna. Does that make some sense? So us gaining those qualities are for Krishna's pleasure, not for our own. Is that
I was reading yesterday, Prabhupada was translating the word Ahotapi. He said it means without material desire or also a spiritual desire.
Probably there it means spiritual desire would mean the four kinds of spiritual liberation. Wanting to be on the same planet as the Lord, the same form, the same wealth, or the, what's it? Or to be an intimate associate.
Oh. Pangyang is saying it's also kind of a form of liberation where you want to advance in spiritual life, you want to be liberated from the lower.
Yeah. So that's the aspect, is that the devotion is still, I mean the process of bhakti is still within the realm of the jnana yoga, may be more prominent. Like that. But if we keep the pure goal there, then we can progress through it. We won't get stuck. So the point is that because the other yogis don't have the ultimate goal in mind, they get stuck within that. Therefore, they get stuck as a karma yogi, and they're called a karma yogi. Or they get stuck in jnana, because they're called that. Or they get stuck in the astanga, and they're called that. But the bhakti, he's reached the goal. So if someone has that ultimate goal, he's called a bhakti yogi, even though he's performing karma yoga, jnana yoga, like this. Because he sees the goal, he doesn't get stuck, he just moves through them as that level has been achieved. And one moves on, because there's no attachment, so there's no false identity. Therefore it's called bhakti. Otherwise, if one identifies with them, one gets stuck at these levels. And so bhakti is not manifest.
What is that activity that actually takes one beyond that attachment to one's spiritual achievement? Or to transcend these, like when you get stuck, it appears that to transcend these obstacles in the path of purity, like one actually has to have attraction for Krishna as Krishna, just as a person and for no other reason. And certainly for that reason, not because I want to become free from my antagonism to the dual world or anything like that. Mm. What is that step? What is the best process to step over that? Because you want some spiritual perfection in a way. And just come to that pure attraction.
From what I understand is, just step back a second, is that now, continuing what we were just discussing before, is that you have all these things. So the Bhagavad Gita is to get us to the point to become Krishna's devotee and to give up all material dharmas. So that's karma, jnana, and yoga. Give those up and just perform bhakti, which has these stages in it. So once that's accepted, and we're doing that, we accept that, then we can look at the same process without having to use these kind of terminologies. And then we can just look at it as the path of devotional service. You know, then we have Vaidhi Sadhana, Raganuga Sadhana, Bhav Sadhana, Prema, and then the details within that, you know, the platforms of Shraddha to Prema, you know, so that Rupa Goswami describes. So then we can just turn to these, and then they give very fine details in the performance of these activities. So once one's accepted this, what the point of Gita, to engage one's activities, then one can transfer to that. Then in that, then Lord Chaitanya describes that the perfection, or the key of all perfection, is that Trinadapi Suni Chena, Tarodapi Sahishuna, Amanina Mana Dena Kirtaniya Siddhahada. You have that, you have the others. It means you can get them. As you come to that, you will cross. If this verse is not practiced, then one will get stuck. Because one can't, and so then one can't get beyond the dhanam, the janam, the sundarin, because one thinks, I have a taste now for chanting, I'm advanced. One can't get beyond, because one wants some distinction for having reached the stage of ruchi. One actually is in ruchi, but one keeps that little bit, so one can't get farther in ruchi. One can't come to the pure platform of ruchi. Because he has that, or he doesn't. But if we respect others, don't expect any for ourselves, we're just going to go beyond. Because you always respect those senior to yourself, and as one advances, also all living entities. So one respects those beyond one's platform. So one will go, keep going. One's tolerant, one's humble. So difficulties come up, one goes on with those. So that becomes the key through which one can progress through all the different stages of devotion to the topmost platform. So this description of the devotional process in the Gita is being described in this way to remove our doubts to follow the process. Then when we basically accept the process, then we can use the descriptions given in Nectar of Devotion to go through, now practice that process. Basically, this is to remove the doubts. We see Arjuna is sitting on the chariot through this whole discussion. When the discussion is finished, then he stands up and fights. He starts performing the service. So when the doubts are removed, then we see we can perform. Then all the details and definitions of the same thing, yavasayapnika buddhi, that will be nishta. You know, nishta bhakti. So that means from nishta, from the beginning stage of madhyam adhikari on. And then when he's talking about one who sees, you know, sees with equal vision this and that, he's talking about the bhava bhakta. So that will become prominent there, but the nishta, being fixed, determination, practice, all these things, that's for bhava, ruchi, and asakti. And you know, where one's very much trying to detach oneself from the fruits and all that, that's going to be the other stages. The stages anartha nivriti, bhajanapriya. Or one is like really trying to overcome those. So it's just these transform. Gita is to remove the doubts that we accept, yes, this is the process. And once we accept that, then it works nicely. And you see, all the different things that we have in our movement, different things that we do, services, all connect to these points of Gita. Any issues anybody brings up also connect to here. Let me say it doesn't connect, but it does connect. You know, one or two we've discussed. Pretty good. But it all connects back to here. What is the position? And then you, because all the details of, all the, how do you say, all the principles of spiritual life are described here. So they all connect here. But this is specific to remove the doubts. Right? So then, like that. And then Bhagavatam is for those who doubts have basically been removed. Though there's still something there. That's why the first nine cantos are there, to remove more, refine it. So then when you come to the tenth canto, then one can actually appreciate Krishna's position. But as Gita establishes one as being not inclined in devotional activities to becoming a devotee of Krishna, then Bhagavatam will refine that platform of devotion. So,
that removes the doubts, say just philosophically speaking, removes all the doubts of what is said is correct. What about the doubt that, now, can I practice it and be successful? Self-doubt.
Yeah, no, we discussed that the other day. Unfortunately, memory being short. Manda sumanda matayo manda pandi. I mean, I think day before yesterday, that was one of the points that was made, is that one may, the faithless. Where was that? Not yet. This is 440. But ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness, they fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in the world nor in this world or in the next. Then Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur differentiates between the faithless and the doubtful. He explains that Krishna has mentioned three classes of people who fail: the ignorant, agya; the faithless, ashradhadhana; and the doubtful, shamshayatma. The agya are foolish like the animals. The ashradhadhana have knowledge of Shastra, but have seen the mutual disagreements of proponents of various theories. They have no trust in any of them. Although the Shamshayatmas have faith, they are swayed by the doubt, I don't know whether this process will be effective in my case. The doubtful have some faith, but they nevertheless doubt that following Shastra will truly award results. They thus follow, but without full faith, hope, and optimism, so they won't have that determination. Such doubters achieve happiness neither in this world nor in the next. But they're different aspects. He just means, he's saying here, who is not successful. But they're coming from different angles. You see, one is basically innocent but doesn't really has faith but doesn't have that determination. They're doubtful. Other ones, the faithless, they know the Shastras, they know this and that, but this one says this, that one says that, what am I supposed to, I don't trust anybody. You know, they have more faith in themselves. And the Agya, just no knowledge at all, just don't care. The Mudas, it says Agya. So this is the point here. I mean, this is Vishwanath saying this. I don't know whether this process will be effective in my case. So then they don't have the full faith, hope, and optimism that's needed to carry on. So they kind of go, well, I don't know. But if they have that faith, this works. And that's why so many examples of others becoming perfect is shown. Nice situations, not so nice situations. You know, Ajamil became perfect, less than perfect situation. Right? Someone's explaining that in his last life, he was this really strict brahmachari. I mean, really strict brahmachari. And then, I forget what happened. He either went into the river or something and got swept away or something. I don't remember how he fell in the river. And then he's floating by. And some lady some young girl is down at the river, you know, taking bath or washing clothes or something. Some reason she's there, she sees him come by. She pulls him out of the water and puts him on the land. And then, you know, somehow it revives him. Then when he revives himself, then, you know, he understands the situation. This girl has helped him this way, and he gets very upset. You know, how dare you touch a brahmachari like this and that? You don't know, you're not supposed to touch this, that, so many things. So then he curses her that in her next life, that she's just going around and touching people like this, she'll be a prostitute. And then, you know, because it's not really a, you know, fair judgment of the situation. It's an emergency situation. It wasn't ordinary. She didn't just walk up to him as he's standing there. But, you know, it was an extraordinary situation. So she figured this is not overly, you know, a well thought out thing. He wasn't very mature in his understanding of brahmacharya. So then he cursed him. Yes, I'll be a prostitute, but you'll be attracted to me. So then Ajamil. So like that, but so less than fortunate situation. But he attained his perfection. Or Prahlad, he's in the family of demons. You know, no advantage or good association. He attains perfection. Like this, Pachina Barhishat, total, absolute karmakandi fanatic. He attains perfection. Not only has he attained, but his sons, the Pratikas, they also attain perfection. So we see everybody's attaining perfection. And from so many different angles, positions, kings and brahmins and kids and you know, fallen people, and they're all attaining perfection. So in this way, then we have the faith to push on like this. That's how we increase our like, you know, how you say that faith, the determination, is by studying the histories of how others have become perfect by following the process. So that's why the Bhagavatam gives us that faith and everything. We see here, works for Arjuna. You know, the Bhagavatam works for so many persons there, so many persons, Chaitanya, Charitamrita, attain perfection. You know, like that. It's all. Otherwise, Nitya Siddhas come down, we can say, okay, yeah, they do all these things. Fine. What about me? It works for them, but you know, we're the conditioned souls. So therefore, it gives all example of conditioned souls attaining perfection. You know, you basically don't hear much, so much about the Nitya Siddhas.
In our case, I think it's nice that the National Society for Krishna Consciousness is similar to Arjuna's situation, because he had a mission fulfilled. So I think then he could like engage himself, and also he could come to that conclusion. Like, I've got to be selfless. I've got activity to do, there's a mission, so I'm going to surrender myself to the mission and just fight for Krishna. And this way I'm going to be selfless. I'm going to do that much for Krishna, because he has removed all my doubts, he has made me, you know, spiritually happy. But now it's my duty to do something for him, and I've got to do it myself this way. So where's my opportunity to fight for him? So this one is kind of like that, because we still have a mission. So otherwise, I think if it's like Vajananandi, it appears to be more difficult to actually come to another mission. You know, completely selfless. But when you've got a mission like that, you've got something positive to work for in a selfless way. So it appears like it's an ideal way of developing that, you know, that people serve the mission, and exactly in line with what Prabhupada is pointing out. Dedicate himself, make his through all of his life and soul, for the mission of his life and soul. It seems like an actually very perfect way to become Shinada. Dedicating oneself
to the and also Prabhupada sometimes says, you know, some war with Maya. So we also have the war, just, you know, we don't different weapons. So here it says armed with knowledge. So with this understanding, proper spiritual understanding, with that, then we fight material nature. So that's good, very good point. It's interesting to note that in the other yugas, you don't find missions as such. It means the mission of the Lord's always coming, performs his pastimes. But as such, an organized, institution for uplifting people, you only find the Lord establishes in the Kali Yuga. You know, he say, became as Buddha and established a mission like that, like an institution. You know, like that. Then he comes as Shankara, establishes an institution. Then he sends the Acharyas, the four Acharyas, Vaishnava Acharya, they establish teaching institutions, missions. And then as Lord Chaitanya comes, and then we have our own Gaudiya mission is established. So it's interesting to note that specifically in the Kali Yuga is made. So you have a way to completely absorb yourself and in this fight for Maya. Something more on that? Yes. You had a question? Speak up a little bit.
After Arjuna had no more doubts and he started with a surface question, then still he had this anger, lamentation, frustration while doing the surface question.
here. Means that the weather, like when Krishna started, Arjuna started doing his service after the speaking of Gita, then while he's fighting, then sometimes there's anger and anxiety and lamentation and all these. So is that normal in the discharge of the service? Fighting this war is what will please Krishna, it is service for Krishna. So those things that, and Krishna wants that the Yudhishthira be established in the throne. So those things that will progress that, then he'll be satisfied with. And those things will be obstacles to establishing that, then there'll be some anxiety about that. So those things are there. So it's just a matter of the equipoised means is that it's not being done for oneself. I can't remember what it was in, what city, it was in Hyderabad or Bombay, Calcutta. There was a Pandal program, and Prabhupada was sitting on the asan, and I'm not sure if he was speaking or doing kirtan or something. And he always used to have devotees on the stage also. And they would do bhajans on that, and many times they would all speak before he would speak. They'd all speak a little bit, and then he would speak last. So then at one of these programs, then it may not have been in India. It might even have been in a university program. I don't know. There's some program. Then some rowdies in the front, near the stage, started bothering the devotees, actually physically bothering the devotees. And Krishna and Prabhupada picked up his kartals by the strings and started swinging around his head. And, you know, he was roaring and he came forward and, you know, scared those people. It's just like you don't mess with devotees. You know, it's just you don't do it. It's not proper. But that's not anger for himself. It's anger for Krishna, because Krishna's desires, Krishna's devotees, Krishna's... In other words, the devotees of Padasevana. When we say Padasevana, that means, you know, worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord. That means the Lord's devotees, his paraphernalia, everything. So when we worship the Lord's feet, surrender the Lord's lotus feet, we find the lotus feet are on the heads of the devotees. So then that means also service to the devotees. Service to the devotees, service to the Tham, service to Tulsi. Anything that is connected is what is called kariya, you know, service like that. So that is all seen as padasevana. So when that's being disturbed, then Krishna won't be satisfied. So when Krishna is not satisfied, then like that. That's why it becomes a little difficult to understand, because sometimes we think that emotions and senses only mean material. But we have to remember that the emotions and the senses started in the spiritual realm, and they pervertedly reflect into the material world. So the perversion is that we're doing it for ourselves here, while in the spiritual world they're doing it for Krishna. That's the difference. Like that. So it becomes a, you know, fine point. Same time as Leela, so then they do all these things, you know, like that. It makes it more interesting. You know.
Even Krishna lost control of his senses when Nishmadeva was going to kill Arjuna. He promised not to fight, and he's completely lost control.
Yeah. That's a very good point. So it's all, it basically still goes back to rasa. But it's just a matter of whether we're situated on spiritual rasa or material rasa. So in the spiritual realm also, all these different qualities are there. All the different qualities, emotions, everything's there. But it's just being done for Krishna's pleasure by the arrangement of Yoga Maya. In the material worlds, we do them for our own purposes, arranged by Mahamaya. So that's the, you know, it's not that after hearing all this then Krishna stands up and like a zombie then, you know, just mechanically goes and shoots everybody on the battlefield and like that. No, it's a person. That's the thing, is as one advances in devotional service, one actually becomes more of a person. Like that, the personality becomes more prominent. You see, when devoted, new bhaktas are basically very similar. You know, spaced out and eat tons of prasadam and, you know, pretty sloppy and all that kind of stuff. But as they're around for a few years, then very individual personalities start to manifest. Very unique personalities. So it's very natural. So then he has a personality, that's all there. It's all for Krishna's pleasure. You know, Bhima is very strong and goes out on the battlefield and picks up elephants and swings them around by the trunk and throws them onto another group of elephants and, you know, roars like a lion and, you know, does all this. It pleases Krishna. That's why in the 26 qualities of a devotee, the Sarup Lakshana means, which you'll find in every devotee, is that surrender to the Lord, the dependence on the Lord, that affection for the Lord. That aspect you find in every devotee. But the other Lakshanas you may or may not find. You may not find humility in Bhima. But that's how he pleases Krishna, by that kind of service. But that's anger for oneself. See, there's anger after frustration. It means I wanted something for myself. I didn't get it. I become angry. So when that anger is there, that's one of the tests where you can check what is the motive behind why I'm doing it. Is the anger because Krishna's mission is being, you know, harmed, and therefore we have to do something? Or is it, are we upset because of something for ourselves, something for the senses, or some facility, or some position, or praise, or recognition, or like that? That's what we have to see. Like that. In any case, then in a humble mood, we do whatever we feel has to be done. Sometimes that's just the way it works. It's like you want to train a bull. I mean, you can't just stand there with folded hands in front of them and say, "My dear bull, you know, now it's very good. You know, you are Dharma, so you are the father, so now we should, the father provides the grains for the children, so now you should put on this yoke and we'll go out in the field and plow the field." You know, you get out the stick and wave it around menacingly, and then the bull understands that now it's time for some work, and work goes on. You know, so it's just sometimes that's how you have to deal in material nature. But we pointed out is that we come to the stage where we understand it's just the introduction of the modes. You know, just like it's just like this. A small child does something it shouldn't. We've told them many times. So you make a face and, you know, or create a mood like you're angry. And then they think, "Oh, I shouldn't do this." But you're not actually angry. It's just you've told them many times nicely, they don't listen. So this time then you go, "Huh?" Like this, and then they run off and then they don't do it. But you're not actually angry. So therefore, we see that it doesn't disturb the rasa. The child and the parent, it doesn't disturb the rasa. But if the parent actually gets angry at the child, you can destroy the rasa. So that's the thing. I've seen some parents where there's a group of people and then a kid comes in and does something, you know, like little kids do. And then, you know, somebody there, the father, the uncle, or that, makes some face and like this, like that. And the kid gets a little scared and runs off, and then all the adults laugh, you know. It's funny, you know, just the kid's reaction and all this. And, you know, there's a cute kid and kids do these things and no one takes it seriously. It's all just life, you know. But I have seen also parents who are actually angry with the child. And those children become very strange. Because they can't, it doesn't relate. Because it's like, They've just been acting according to the modes, and there's something they're acted like that, but the underlying principle of shelter and protection was never stopped. But in the other, the anger was there, and the reason is just because the desires and all that of the parent are completely being frustrated. And based on that, so the child is there to please the parent rather than to please Krishna. And the rasa of the parent taking care and the tolerance, all these things just kind of go out the window. The kid doesn't know how to deal with it. And so they become very strange and like that. They have great difficulty relating to others, you know, putting their trust in others or surrendering or becoming too intimate. All these things come up from this. Because it was actual anger. Well, the other is just, it's feigned anger, just for the purpose of getting the work done. You know? Like Prabhupada said to his daughter, his wife and daughter had what he called cleanliness disease, where they would over-clean things. You know? It means the aristocratic families in Calcutta are super clean. Like one of the devotees here was telling that in his family, when you use the toilet, because there's a big, you know, joint family, big house, and all the toilets are all in one place in the house. Generally, most of these houses are on the ground floor in the back. And after using the toilet, then the rule of the house is you can't touch the tap because your hands are dirty. So another member of the family has to open the tap. So generally everybody's always around. There's always something going on, and you have so many people in the house, someone's always there. You know, because it's like the toilets and the places for cleaning and bathing and all these things are all separate. It's not all that you don't have these, you know, little attached baths where everything's all in one room. The big open areas and one side's the toilets, and then it's an open area, and then there's the taps for bathing, there's another place where they wash the pots. They do, you know, so all that kind of stuff goes on. There's always someone around. But he'd say occasionally, you know, when everyone was out at something like that, and he'd be sitting there for a long time, half hour or something, waiting for somebody to come along. But it was rare, but he said it would happen. So the families by nature were very clean. Very clean. You know, I've even seen devotee when he does wash his hands, then the tap's on, he won't put the soap in the left hand. He'll put the soap in the right hand, and while water's running on the soap, he will turn it so it makes soap go in the left hand, and then he'll wash the left hand. And then once that's been rinsed, then he'll use both hands of the soap. So it's like, and this is aristocratic business families. You know, this is not Brahmins. So sometimes you get, you know, someone gets over-obsessed with cleanliness. Beyond this, you know, we would say this is pretty fanatic, but this is just pretty normal for high-class aristocrats. That's why it's called aristocratic, because they're very clean, gentle, you know, soft-spoken, and refined. They go beyond that. So one day, Prabhupada found his daughter. She was throwing water inside the electric plugs to clean inside. She saw there was some dirt inside the plug, like that. So then Prabhupada came up to her and says, if you do this again, I'll kill you, like that. So he doesn't mean it, he's not going to kill her, but he says it with that strong mood and this and that, and then you know, okay, father is very serious, I won't do this again, right? You know, but it's in other words, it's feigned anger, like that. So that is the, that's the culture.
Protect the child.
Yes, to protect the child. Otherwise, you know, do something stupid. So it's like that. That's the culture. The Vedic culture is very fine, and the whole thing is based on relationship. So what is good for the relationship? But to do that, then there's certain restrictions that have to be there. Like, if you want the parental ras to work properly, children need to be submissive to the parents. They have to accept them as authorities. They've been through it. They were kids once. They've grown up. They've been in the material world. They know how it works. So you listen to their advice. If that's not there, the parental ras breaks down. it has to be there. Same time as the parents have to have that mood of shelter for the children. Otherwise the rasa breaks down. It's not that they're there sometimes and sometimes they're not. You know, just as whim, you know. That's the thing. Parent means they're always there. So that kind of a thing, always there means it's support, not necessarily physically. I'm just saying support. So these things, then the rasa works, but that means restriction. The parents are restricted, and the child is restricted. Then there's rasa. There's no restriction, there's no rasa. It's just anarchy. You know? Dog eat dog, that's all. So that is the point is here, is that, so we're talking here is the culture is there. He's saying do the duties. So that means that one is restricted and one follows these duties. But now one is doing for Krishna rather than just for themselves. Then it becomes transcendent. Then it becomes sat. Now we're raising the child because this is Krishna's devotee, and these are the systems by which it is said how one should raise children. So one follows that, that becomes sacrifice. It becomes the way that we advance, the way we purify our existence. If we're just doing it just because we think this is best and that's it, that's not connected to Krishna, then it may be pious, may not be pious. Like that. But it does, it's not sacrifice. So when this is understood, then whatever one's position in the Varnashram, it doesn't matter, because it's all sacrifice, it all elevates us, it all takes us back to Godhead. But each and everyone has some restriction. You know? Otherwise, there's no rasa. Where's the rasa? You know? Then it comes rasa bas. Like, you just do anything you want, like this. And Rupa Goswami gives an example of one gopi comes up to Krishna and says, you know, all glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then goes up and embraces him. So he says, well, this is rasa bas. You know, because if he says, all glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she should have stood there with folded hands and offered some prayers. Or, she should have not bothered to say that and just come up and embrace Krishna. But if you put the two together, it's rasa bas. So we can't just make up our own system, pick what we like, do what we like. Otherwise, then we end up with very strange situations. It was interesting, I was just thinking today that this is like Mahabharata is going on. It's like a whole cultural treatise, how everybody can basically perform their act duties and all that. Then, when you go into Gita, it starts off in that mode. You know, the whole first chapter, basically, into the second, is in that mode, basically, of Mahabharata. Then in the second chapter, that just stops. And now it's, what is the mood of how you should perform your activities that are being set as example in the Mahabharata? You know, so do those, and then when he's understood that, then it again goes back to Mahabharata. So it's after doing all these things, Vyasadeva just kind of sticks it in there, just so you learn how to properly perform your prescribed duties that are being given example there. Like that. That was interesting. That's the thing, Krishna is very broad-minded, so if anything we do, he's accepting it. there's even a little something done, then there's no loss. And one of the points I think is made in the second or third chapter is even if you can't perform the prescribed duties, just do something that's connected to Krishna. Somehow or another, do something, anything. You know, best is to do the prescribed duties like that, but if you don't know what that is, don't know how, don't have any, then do something. So it's, and Krishna accepts it. Whatever is done, he accepts it. But the more purified the mentality, then the more Krishna accepts it. If you do some service for Krishna that's under authority, one will get the benefit, but it may be very small, especially if one is, you know, very proud or other things like this, other bad qualities. Those things may reduce the how much benefit you get. And it's not that Krishna is not going to try to remove those things from our personality. He'll try to remove by, you know, putting up different things that we'll call obstacles, but they're just basically Krishna trying to remind us we're not the controller, the enjoyer, the doer, like that. And it's like Bali Maharaj, he's thinking, oh, I have so much land, you're asking for a little bit, take more. You know, so he's thinking, I can give. So Vishnu, oh, you can give? You can give 3 steps? Okay, let's see. 2 steps, he's taken everything. Okay, now, where you said you can give, you're the doer, so give. Where's the 3rd step going to go? Like that. So then, you know, he understands that, well, there's the person who owns so much stuff, but he's separate from what he owns. So then he understood that even though everything's been taken away, all his possessions, land, everything, he still has himself. So then he offered himself like that. Then, from that, then he got everything again back. So he had so much, but he lost it because of this thing, I'm the doer. But when we learn the lesson and change, then he gets back more than what he had before. So it's, that's the point. Because Krishna, none of this stuff, it's all material nature. It's his. So he's not attached to it. So if he maintains it, he destroys it, it doesn't matter to him. His point is the devotees are advancing towards him. The devotees are developing. Right? Devotees are developing. Then if that can be done by making things building up, he'll do it. If it'll make it by falling it apart, he'll do that. Whatever will make the devotees, like it's going very, very nicely, devotees become complacent. Then you start to make things fall apart, then the devotees become enthusiastic. Like that, because Krishna's not attached. So, you know, money, big buildings, you know, all these different things don't mean, I mean, you know, we're Rupanugas. So Rupa Goswami and his Didi Govindaji are like the central feature of our Sampradaya. So then one would naturally expect that Govindaji's temple would be maintained very nicely. But, you know, even though it was the most magnificent temple, I mean, it was more magnificent than anything that the Mughal Empire had made. You know, so much so that it was decided that they should dismantle 4/5 of it. So what's left is 1/5. You know, and if you look at it, there's certain elements of it that, you know, engineers can't figure out how it was done. You know, there's that cross in the middle. And right where the cross is there's a dome. It's a dome, and it's all carved like a concave lotus, and in the middle of them there's like a little stone thing that comes out of design. That whole thing is one stone. No one can figure out how they got it up there. So this is only 1/5 of what was originally there. It's the only thing, naturally, but Krishna's not attached to it. Huh? It's his house, he's not attached. He moved to Jaipur. Like that. So the whole point is if one thing will advance, like you see, how many in Jaipur, he sits there and people are in their shops, the shop owners, people are in their shops, like very good time to go. It's like in the evening. Right? You kind of finish your work 5-6 o'clock, they'll go to the shops in the evening to do some shopping and that after work. When 7 o'clock comes, doesn't matter if the shop's full of people or not, the shop shuts. And the shop owner goes to the arti. And after arti, he comes back and opens the shop. So he's not worried, well, people are in the shop, I'm losing money in this. No, he just closes the shop. So Govindaji stays there. Because this is the kind of devotion that's going on, the reciprocation that's going on. You go there. All day there's people there. All day they're doing kirtan. All day they're doing parikram. All day they're doing prasad distribution. So he stays there. Yeah. He's not worried about the big temple and this and that. The temple in Jaipur is not at all comparable. Like that. The original one he was put in is even smaller. Nice little temple. But nothing in comparison, you know. The original temple he was in was like a little bit bigger than Radharaman. Means the Jaipur. Like that. Then he moved to the one he is now, a bit, little bigger facility. Like that. Simple. But it's the reciprocation with the devotees that he's interested in. So the transcendental exchange of emotion, that's what is interesting to the Lord. And that is what the Vedic culture is for. Situating us properly in, you know, the our position of emotions and senses according to our prescribed duties. And then transforming that to doing it for Krishna. Then it becomes nice. Otherwise, what's the meaning for Krishna? You know, and what's the meaning for the soul? Anything else? Overview of Bhagavad Gita ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Some of these are Bhaktivinoda ki. China's like Orphan. Yeah.